Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
Hey, welcome to the Three Martini Lunch, the Thursday edition for Radio America. I'm Brett Winterbull, joined by National Review's Jim Garrity. I can't believe we're already at the end of the week, Jim.
Not quite.
Very close.
Still tomorrow. But yes, obviously, I guess a good way of pointing is that if you need to get a phone call returned on the Friday before a holiday weekend, give up now.
Absolutely.
by about noon today is about your last chance to get any productivity out of the week. So, you know, TikTok.
Absolutely. Well, listen, somebody who probably wants today to end very quickly and to get right into that holiday weekend very quickly to erase the front page news has got to be Time Magazine's Mark Halperin, who in an appearance on MSNBC, I guess we should just let it speak for itself, Jim, and then you can weigh in on it. Here's Mark Halperin from Time Magazine on MSNBC.
Are we on the 7-second delay today?
Oh, Lord. No.
I wanted to characterize how I thought the president behaved. I thought he was kind of a d*** yesterday.
Oh. Oh, my God. Delay that.
Alex, it was the wrong button? What's wrong with
him? Tell you what I think of you, but you don't know what button to push.
It's our fault. No,
joking aside, this is not a pro forma apology. It's an absolute apology.
Yeah.
And heartfelt to the president and to the viewers. I became part of the joke, but that's no excuse. I made a mistake, and I'm sorry, and I shouldn't have said it. And I apologize to the president and to the viewers who heard me say that.
What do you say, Jim Garrity?
Well, many words came to mind regarding the president's performance yesterday, and one of those things where perhaps not all of them are fit for family consumption. But you know, most of us have the good sense to recognize. He was a jerk. He was cranky. He was surly. He was curt. There's a lot of words. And emphasize curt. I did not misspell that.
Yes.
lest any British folks out there think I was using some other word. The bottom line here, the thing I kind of find interesting is that we on the right always kind of roll our eyes and believe that the mainstream media is constantly throwing roses at the feet at Obama. And one of the fascinating, occasionally you'll see bubbling up frustration in the White House press corps because Barack Obama doesn't do a particularly good job of answering questions, particularly when he doesn't like the question. And sometimes yesterday he made some very blunt points of, well, I'm just not going to answer that question, or I don't even need to get into the constitutional question. Pretty much openly stating, I'm going to ignore that question, I believe came from Chuck Todd. So the idea of seeing these types of comments from Halperin, nobody's idea of a conservative,
nope,
is kind of fascinating. Now, we keep waiting for the ultimate breakdown between the Obama administration and the White House press corps. We never get it. I think it's that symbiotic, or you might say parasitic, relationship between the two in which they need to be on good terms with the administration in order to get their phone calls returned. But I think, look, I it's hard to believe that Mark Halperin is the only person who had this kind of response when watching Obama's answers yesterday.
I agree with you 100%. I don't know what. Look, first rule of broadcasting, every mic is on, every mic is hot, and every mic can cost you your job. And the fact that he looked into the camera and said, I'm going to say something here, but make sure you dump it. You didn't dump it? I mean, what are you doing?
That's really putting your faith in that control room, aren't they?
It sure enough is. Well, listen, let's hope that weekend gets here much, much more quickly than Mark Halperin is expecting it to, because I got a feeling he's going to be getting a couple of phone calls and may hear that word coming back his way from the White House as well. One of the other things that came out of the presser yesterday, and this is the nominee for the bad martini, by the way. What is this sudden war on corporate jets? What's going on here, Jim?
This is, I'm going to try to simplify, what it is a rate of depreciation in the value for how much you pay, and your tax write-off gets calculated based on that. The nuts and bolts of it are complicated, but the bottom line is this is something that was enacted in a stimulus bill that was actually signed towards the tail end of the Bush administration. The stimulus bill that Obama signed into law, passed by a Democratic Congress, continued this. But now Obama has found it as probably the most convenient villain to enjoy an Orwellian 2 minutes hate now that he's in kind of a tough spot on the debt talks, that basically he needs to emphasize that he's being reasonable and what Republicans want is completely unreasonable. So the best example he can come up with is corporate jets. And as if to like underline in big red marker that this was the talking point that he wanted to come out of this press conference, he mentioned it six times. which is kind of almost like you wonder if he's got some sort of obsessive compulsive disorder. You ask him what he has for breakfast this morning, and he denounces corporate Jets. Now, besides my immediate thought, of course he's a Bears fan. Of course he's complaining about the Jets. My particular gripe about this is, you know, people looked at this and said, well, wait a second. The grand total, if we repealed this tax provision immediately, it would save the government $3 billion over 10 years. Now, Brett, as you know, we're talking about a debt problem in the trillions. You know, and Republicans are looking for spending cuts. You know, Obama thinks he's doing a very big deal by putting a mere $1 trillion in spending cuts over the a long period of time. You know, this is talking about a tiny aspect of this and trying to make that the defining issue. And the amazing thing about Obama is that he will do this, and at the same time, he'll insist that he's being the grown-up, that everybody else is engaging in scare tactics, that he's the only one who's talking responsibly, et cetera, et cetera. And it's baffling, it's maddening, it's kind of standard for Obama. It is, you know, the thing that kind of just jumped out at me is that, so he does this yesterday, and he concluded it's time to stop playing games, and then he goes to a Rose Garden ceremony for the WNBA champions. By the way, I wouldn't make "Don't Play Games" my closing slogan if that's the next thing. And then today, Barack Obama, who flies anywhere he wants, anytime, cost-free, and will go up to Philadelphia for two fundraisers on Air Force One, where he will denounce insufficient taxation of corporate jets. And I don't think anybody's going to notice the irony of this. And that, you know, Obama is, you know, always believes in one kind of standard for himself, another standard for everybody else. And, you know, this is not the mark of a president who is, you know, dead set serious on solving the debt problem. This is a guy who's looking for a 2012 campaign theme, and it's going to be, you know, darn those corporate jets.
Well, perhaps the Wall Street barons and Hollywood executives and elites need to go back to the robber baron days and get the private rail car. How about we get the private rail car?
There we go. Yeah. One of those high-speed rail, you know, private rail cars.
Absolutely right. Well, listen, that's something that everybody needs to keep watching, especially as this president continues to campaign with increasing frequency and vows to end the games. All right. Well, listen, those two martinis have certainly got me feeling a little crazy, and I'm telling you, I'm looking at a story that's out there moving. Apparently, the Fox News 3 a.m. news and comedy show Red Eye just had an explosive series of ratings. What's going on here, and what does this say about the landscape?
Well, I guess the good way of putting it is that this is amongst the 18 to 34 demographic, and there's a part of me that says, all right, this is not that shocking. That is a demographic that I have just recently departed. And I don't know many folks younger than me who are just every night itching to watch Piers Morgan or Anderson Cooper or, you know, I can't even recall the third person who's part of the CNN primetime lineup, which is probably, you know, revealing something. Whereas Greg Gutfeld, you know, those, anyone who has, you know, either heard of it or watched the show, and I got to admit, I've never watched the show live. It's always been, you know, recording on the DVR. But, you know, it's a fun show. And it's fun to watch. And yes, it's, you know, it's a conservative show, but it's probably the least explicitly conservative show on Fox. Perhaps a little more, you know, libertarian. Certainly extremely irreverent in its tone. But, you know, it's a fun show to watch. And you think about it, in this world of news in which we're always dealing with either very complicated topics or very frustrating topics or very sad topics, a guy who can make you laugh while you're hearing about all these things is, you know, obviously going to stand out. That's why a lot of young people watch Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert. And while we certainly think those guys are more to the left, I can understand the appeal of them and can enjoy them. So the question is, how do we get Greg Gutfeld? Imagine what he would be if he was in primetime. Imagine what he would be in a non, you know, 3 a.m. infomercial time slot. But obviously for Fox News, they may argue, like, hey, you know, 3 a.m. is working for him. Why change what works?
Let me ask you, though, on that point, because you mentioned Colbert, you mentioned Jon Stewart. So many on the right will pull you aside in different areas and say, God, we need to do something. We need a conservative Jon Stewart. We need to find the conservative Colbert. Does this show represent the conservative coefficient of Colbert and Stewart?
It is probably the closest we've come to it. And one of the things I've always kind of figured that conservatives have made these kind of arguments for a long time. They've said, you know, oh, we need our conservative Saturday Night Live. We need a conservative Leno or Letterman or something like that. I think one of the problems is that most of these guys, humor works when it's aimed at humor. If you set out, well, we're going to do conservative comedy, it tends to not work as well. I think that one of the things Greg Gutfeld used to edit Maxim, And he also used to edit like one of a health magazine, and he emphasizes he was the least healthy person to ever edit a health magazine. So there's a part of me that get the feeling that if Greg Gutfeld was told you're never allowed to talk about politics again, he could still do a funny show.
Right,
you know, that his humor doesn't, his humor comes from his innate worldview and the way he looks at life and attitude, et cetera. And it's not like he gets up every morning and says, how can I make fun of Obama today? Whereas by comparison, I'd like to think that Stewart and Colbert could be funny if they were told, you're not allowed to tell jokes about Republicans anymore. But I think it's fairly revealing that with rare exceptions, Jon Stewart and Colbert, their heart isn't into it when they have to make fun of who you know, we perceive them as being their guys. And certainly, you know, Jon Stewart made a very big and dramatic ordeal out of having to make fun of Anthony Weiner, who he considered a friend, when, you know, I mean, in the end, if you couldn't find humor in Weiner sending pictures of you-know-what, you know.
Yeah, what are you going to do?
That's the high-hanging softball. That's batting practice for comedians, really. Well, my suspicion is that, you know, if anybody is going to become the conservative Jon Stewart, Gutfeld is probably the leading candidate.
Well, I certainly think he's a hilarious guy and an entertaining guy, and it's a great show, and we'll continue to watch it at 3 o'clock in the morning. Thank goodness for TiVo. Well, listen, I'm feeling great. You know, I'm excited. I'm ready to go out there and try to make the rest of those phone calls before we have to depart for the long weekend starting tomorrow. But there will be another episode of the 3 Martini Lunch this week. It's been a blast going over these stories. I am Brett Winterbull from Radio America. That is Jim Garrity from National Review. It's the 3 Martini Lunch Thursday edition. We'll see you tomorrow for the Friday 3 Martini Lunch.